Good morning. We're going to go ahead and call our study session to June 21st, 2012 to order. I am Dennis Kavanaugh, and I'm chairing the meeting this morning. The mayor and vice mayor are excused. They are both out of town. Councilmember Glover is here. And Councilwoman Higgins, you are connected by telephone, correct?
I am on the phone this morning, yes.
Great, thank you. The first item on our agenda is to review the items for the June 25th regular council meeting. Just as a procedural note, there's a little problem with the way the wording on the agenda for the special council meeting on Monday. The city attorney has advised me that we will not review that this morning because it's not listed on our agenda this morning. So if you have any questions about the special council meeting agenda, you can ask city staff today, and we will review it at our study session on Monday night. So let's go to the regular council meeting agenda for Monday. And so do you have anything on items 2 through 3C? Three D through four B.
We used a kind of a new process, at least new to me, about the value, how they calculated the backhoe bid, and I thought that was actually worth noting. And if maybe we could come up and talk about a little bit about how they went about that process, I thought it was really interesting.
And that's item 4A.
4A, yes.
Good morning. Traditionally, we have purchased through lowest cost bid. And doing that, a lot of times we've noticed over the life of a vehicle that in reality, even though we paid a relatively small amount for the vehicle, through the life, it cost more than some of the competitors would have cost. So we've used a tool called life cycle cost bid. And in doing that, we're taking a look at the operational cost, we're taking a look at the resale value, and all of those are performance bonded items in the contract itself. So the dealer is guaranteeing to us a resale amount at repurchase amount. And also, he's guaranteeing us the uptime and also guaranteeing to us the maintenance cost, not to be exceeded. So what we've done is we've been doing the life cycle cost, even though the capital cost is a bit higher. If you look at your spreadsheet, you'll see that the overall life cycle cost is considerably lower. And that's how we made the determination. This is a tool that's used by several states, California being one of them now. They're doing life cycle costs on almost everything, almost all their purchases today.
Great. Thank you.
I don't know what to call you. Vice Mayor, Mayor,
Mr. Chairman.
Dennis, Mr. Chairman. Who's doing the maintenance on the vehicles then? Are we doing it at the city or is the dealer?
Yeah, we'll continue to do the maintenance. If it's anything over $500, we contact them because obviously they do have a performance bond, so if it exceeds a certain amount of money, they actually pay the city for us to do the maintenance on the vehicle.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. Next will be items 4C through 4F. And items 4G through 4J. Items 4K through 5H. I would note that on item 5A, after we review the agenda, there'll be a very short presentation on item 5A. But items 4K through 5H. Items 5I through 6A. And again, I would note on item 5Q, the manager wants to have a very short presentation on this item after we review the agenda. So items 5I through 6A. Items 6B through 6I. Items 6J through 7D. Items 8A through 9A. Mr. Brady?
Mr. Kavanaugh, there's been a request and by council, in order to make sure council is comfortable putting 9A on consent. Is there anybody who would be have a different opinion to that, or should we leave it as it is?
Pleasure of the council, Councilwoman Higgins. Yeah. Councilwoman Higgins.
I thought we were still going to have some discussion on that, so I would like it off consent, please.
Okay, so 9A will stay off consent. All right. I think that completes the review of items. We're going to go back to the two short presentations. And the first one is on item, actually it's 4L and 5A, I think, together.
Good morning, Council. We're here today to give you a short presentation on two agreements that are on the agenda. One is a lease agreement with the Mesa Convention and Visitors Bureau, and the other is the agreement related to the transient occupancy tax. The tax, also known as the bed tax, currently it's at 5%. It was increased from 3% to 5% in November of 2010. It's used to promote tourism in the city of Mesa. The slide here gives you a breakdown of how the funds that are generated from the bed tax are split. From the 3%, City of Mesa receives $25,000 for administrative charge, $100,000, and this is annually, for spring training facility improvements, and $200,000 for capital needs at the Mesa Convention Center. From the 2%, the Visitors Board share actually is a $350,000 maximum, and again, that's annually. Then you also have a lease agreement that is on the agenda for Monday. That lease agreement is a 10-year lease. It does have 2 5-year renewal options on that lease. It's $4,700 a month is what the lease payment is. We are abating the rent for the first 3 years. The reason for that is the Convention and Visitors Bureau is doing approximately $355,000 worth of improvements to the building. And I have Gary Levine today here with the Visitors Bureau, and he's going to give you some more detail in regards to the building improvements that they're planning over the next couple of years.
Good morning. Obviously, I'm not sure which way to go here. Obviously, with the renaissance going on in Mesa these days, with the Fiesta District going to be renovated, downtown is going through its own renaissance. We thought that it's time to renovate the building. It's been about 22 years, I think it's been, since it was renovated inside. As you can see, we have some current pictures here, and thought that visitors, guests, groups, conventions, people coming into downtown Mesa, people wanting to do business in Mesa, it's time to renovate that area and make it more presentable and more contemporary. So basically we hired a local designer, and they basically came up with this idea. We're going to start with the two boardrooms first. The main boardroom, which you can see here, basically new wall treatment, new ceiling treatment, carpet, take away the existing sort of old wooden French doors that are there now, and put an all glass entry and use that for the main boardroom. And then we have a secondary boardroom as well. This one will house about 25 to 30 people. The main boardroom, or the larger boardroom, will hold about 50 to 60, so that's going to be renovated as well. We consider this to be phase one of the renovation. Phase two would go into the lobby and make it more comfortable with Wi-Fi, no more brochure racks, that type of thing, and bring that into a sort of a more comfortable level, a more nicer sense of arrival, if you will, for guests coming into Mesa. Phase three would be the office area and putting new carpet and wall treatment there. And then, of course, phase four would be the exterior. Probably won't get to that till next year, just to do some light facade work, paint, do some asphalt, and new signage, again, to create that new sense of arrival for visitors coming into Mesa.
Questions from the council?
Just one comment.
Mr. Richens?
It's about time. Great. Thank you. It looks beautiful.
We can do your chambers after, if you like.
He's not wrong.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next short presentation is on item 5Q.
Good morning, Council. Frank McRae, Energy Resources Department Director, and joining me is Anthony Cadorn, our Energy Resource Supply Coordinator. He managed this project from beginning to end. We've brought a couple elements of the Integrated Resource Plan to you before for approval and direction, those being the energy supply contracts, which we renegotiated through an RFP process earlier this year, and also the pilot program for the photovoltaic program for net metering and rebates. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Tony to go through the presentation we have.
Good morning. So as Frank mentioned, I'll be going over the IRP process, or integrated resource planning. IRP is a utility best practice that's used to determine what the best resource supply is for a utility. So in Mesa's case, that's the lowest cost, safest, and still retaining reliability in the electric supply. And that encompasses environmental stewardship as well. One of the key components to this is customer input. So we sought customer input through iMesa, Pancake Breakfast, neighborhood outreach meetings, and three IRP-specific meetings where we invited the public to come and comment on our IRP plan, various stages throughout the process. And from that, those meetings, we determined that solar and other renewables are reliable, as well as net metering for a PV program. As you can see, we currently receive about 21% of our electric supply through inexpensive renewable and very reliable hydroelectric contracts through the Western Area Power Administration. And this process is part of retaining those contracts. So because they're our lowest supply option, we want to make sure that we get the IRP in to Western. The remaining about 77% of that supply mix is through long-term contracts with Shell Energy North America and Constellation Energy Commodities Group. And then the remainder of our supply is purchased on the actual open energy market as we need it. So we came up with four main components moving forward for our IRP. The first being continuing with long-term and short-term contractual arrangements. This fits in very well with how we operate the electric utility currently. It's simple to administer, and it positions us to capitalize on a very favorable electric market currently while still retaining a lot of stability over the long term. And one of those opportunities that may be arising is the Hoover Dam actually has capacity coming up in 2017. And because our contracts are cascading to expire, not all at the same time, we have contracts expiring then. So it allows us to capitalize on those sorts of opportunities. So continuing with that strategy gives us mobility to be able to seize those opportunities. The third portion of the IRP plan is to position Mesa as something that the customers can use to learn how to better conserve energy. So not all of our customers are the same, obviously. So one energy improvement at somebody's house may not be as effective as something at somebody else's house. So we want to help our customers learn more about where they use their energy and how to better conserve it. And the fourth part of our IRP strategy is a 12-month solar PV pilot program. We've never administered a program like this before, so this will allow us to investigate the pros and cons and the difficulties in administering this type of program over a short period, so we can better evaluate whether to look into a program like this over the long term. Any questions?
Any questions from the council? Mr. Richards?
I don't have, I just want to make a quick comment. I was recently over at the WAPA substation over at Stapley, and their lines that come in, and that whole area looks really shabby. If you could pass on to WAPA a request to clean the place up, it looks like heck, and I think we deserve better in Mesa. So I just wanted to pass that along, because I saw this on the agenda. We were talking about WAPA a little bit. I figured, hey, close enough, you know. So I'm going to take my shot now. So, but
we'll forward that message and ask them to take a look WAPA at their maintenance of the area.
Thank you.
Maybe we won't review out of order. Any other questions or comments, Councilwoman Higgins? Anything?
No, I'm fine. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Back to our study session agenda. Item 2A is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Escobedo at Vista Verde development. Ms. Salanca.
Good morning, Council. We're here today to just give you a very high-level overview of the proposed deal points for the Escobedo low-income housing tax credit program. We've been here a couple of times over the last several months just basically explaining what the project is. We're at the point now where we're working with Gorman and Companies and Save the Family, and we have representatives here in the audience today if you have any specific questions for them. But we're working on the specific deal points for the lease and the development agreement. The idea is, based on your direction today, staff will go back with the attorneys and with the applicant and actually put the detail together for the lease and the development agreement, and then bring that back to you for the July 9th council meeting. Just to remind you, the project area is between Hibbert and the North Sarine Alley north of University. That will be primarily low to moderate income, affordable housing, residential units, initially rental with an option to purchase beginning at year 15. The south of University parcel that you see here outlined in red, we're calling that the Community Services Campus. The phase one portion of this will build an approximately 15,000 square foot new building for Save the Family.
Ms. Richens?
Is this all of the Escobedo property or just a portion of it?
This is a two-phase project, and there was some confusion about that. I think initially I was here a couple of months ago to talk about that. Basically, the phase one of the project, I can find the cursor here, there we go, encompasses the area along Hibbert and then along University. That's phase one. The council direction previously had been to give the applicant exclusive development rights for two funding cycles after they get phase one. They were notified this year that they did get the tax credits for phase one. They will do demolition on that property and then construction of approximately 70 residential units and the Save the Family building south of University. Based on prior council discussion, then we will give them exclusive development rights for the funding cycle 2013 and 2014 for the phase two property, which is a little bit along University, but then going up here on both sides of Pasadena. Those units will not be demolished as part of phase one, so they will be sitting there. Part of the agreement with the applicant, Gorman and Companies, is that they will take over responsibility for security and maintenance of those phase two units. There's recently been a significant amount of vandalism. It's costing the city real estate department a fair amount of time and aggravation to keep them up. Gorman anticipates probably putting a fence around there and securing them to deal with the vandalism. They will be obligated to maintain those units until and if they get their phase two funding. If they don't get their phase two funding after two cycles, then basically the deal for phase two goes away and we'll have property sitting there. Just to briefly review, we've got approximately 11 acres between Hibbert and Sarine, primarily for the residential, and then on the north side of University. There is a 30-year requirement by the Department of Housing under this program that has to be maintained as residential low to moderate income. One of the possibilities up there, we've been working with Helen's Hope Chest in United Way. If United Way takes the option, Gorman will be obligated to establish an 8,000-square-foot facility on the north side of University for Helen's Hope Chest. In the interim, when they're demolishing the existing Helen's Hope Chest building, they will put $10,000 in a separate fund to pay for two moves of Helen's Hope Chest, one to a temporary facility, and then depending on whether or not United Way takes the option to occupy 8,000 square foot, if they get the phase two funding, move them into the second phase or to some other location that is not yet designated. As I said, on the area south of University, we have a 15,000 square foot building in phase one. The plans for that have not yet been finalized, and that eventually will be built out to include a couple of other smaller buildings, one of which is a proposed conference center that would be a shared amenity between United Way and Save the Family.
Ms. Richens?
Just to be clear about that appraised value number that you have there, is that before or after demolition? Is that counting the demolition costs?
Yeah, $1.7 million is net of the demolition.
Okay, thank you.
The phase one, again, is approximately 6.3 acres north of University. The current proposal from the applicant is that they will demolish and remove all of the existing structures, and they will reconstruct approximately 70 low to moderate income rental units with an option to purchase at year 15. They will maintain four legacy units that will be rehabbed, repurposed as community amenities for that development. Also on phase one, there's approximately half an acre south of University, and again, the current proposal is to put an approximately 15,000 square foot sort of headquarters for Save the Family and potentially for other nonprofit incubators. The developer installs all of the off-site and the on-site improvements, including water, sewer, undergrounding, electric, abandoning the gas lines in place. Under their application to both the Department of Housing and also the proposal to Mesa, they will build the entire facility to LEED's gold standard. In phase two, and again, what I want to emphasize here is that there's no guarantee on the funding for phase two, but if they get funding either in year 2013 or 14, there would be an additional 3.95 acres of residential north of University, again with that 8,000 square foot building option. The United Way will let Gorman and Companies know by October of 2012 whether or not they want to take them up on that offer. And again, in phase two, at that time, the developer would demolish and remove all of the existing structure. Phase two will also include some minor additional building. They only have room for about an additional 1,900 square foot for a nonprofit building, and then a relatively small shared conference center that will be between Save the Family and United Way. At this point in time, Mesa United Way is not part of this deal. There was some discussion early on that maybe that their building south of University would be included, but it is not currently included in the project. To clarify the organizational structure, the partnership will be a limited liability company. They have private investors that take advantage of the tax credits that will comprise 99.99% of the investment. Between Gorman and Save the Family, they will comprise 0.01% of the financial structure. Gorman and Save the Family will be the managing partners, and there will be a property manager on the site.
Ms. Richens?
I think it's worth noting on this slide, you could look at that and go, oh my gosh, they don't have anything to do with this. This is a traditional low-income housing tax credit structure for doing these things with a nonprofit. This is, they've been doing the structure of these kind of deals for, 20, 25 years of the tax credit process. So I just didn't want that to alarm anyone. That is how it's, just how it's done in this financial process.
The financing plan, again, the financing is primarily from the sale of low-income housing tax credits. Gorman has been awarded their allocation by Department of Housing, but they have until July 16th to actually accept it, and they must demonstrate control of the land by July 16th, which in the proposal that we're coming forward with is a 30 year nominal rate lease. We are not proposing to donate the land. They are proposing with phase one and phase two, there will be approximately $23 million of improvements on the property. And they provide a performance guarantee to their investors that they complete the project. One issue that did change from the original proposal, they are requesting home funding. The original proposal did not include that. They're asking basically to reallocate $342,000 in fiscal year 12-13 and $150,000 in year 13-14. In talking to Tammy Albright, they can do that. They didn't have specific addresses that they were allocated for. They have requested an additional $200,000 set aside. There is no guarantee that they will get that. They will have to compete with other nonprofits for that $200,000. As I said, phase one has received their allocation based on, I'm sorry,
let's talk about that a little bit.
The home?
Yeah, okay. About, you know, assuming the word, is this fiscal year 13-14 to help facilitate their next tax credit award, or is that to go back into this phase one project?
I think,
Phase one.
So they're gonna pull money 2 years away back into this. That's the idea.
Actually, this is funds that they were allotted last year and this year. So it's for them for rental. They are our CHOTO for rental.
Right.
So they're just asking to put it towards this project.
CHOTO is.
I'm sorry. Community development. No, community housing development organizations.
You can leave your quarter at the desk.
I know.
I'll keep it. I'll get it.
So this is money that has already been set aside for them to provide rental housing. So, and actually, because of the time frames, with the tax credits, it helps us meet our federal time frames.
Okay. Thank you.
As I said, phase one has received their allocation. Phase two, based on prior council discussion and direction, that we will hold those development rights for funding year 2013 and 2014. If they do not get their allocation by year 2014, they forfeit any right to develop that property, and the city would then have the ability to entertain whatever other development proposals might be appropriate. We are looking at two separate development agreements, one for the first phase, one for the second phase, and then also two separate leases, again, one for each phase. But we will be bringing both of those development agreements and both of those leases to you on July 9th, assuming we pull everything together. They will be with separate LLCs because there will be separate LLCs for the phase one financing and the phase two. The proposed deal points, and I'm really looking for some direction here on whether or not you're good with proposing or moving forward with this. Basically, we're proposing a nominal 30-year lease rate, and the nominal figure that we've come up with is approximately $6,000 a year with a 3% escalator to just cover basic staff time associated with monitoring the property. At year 15, if Save the Family exercises the option to purchase, the sale price would be based on fair market value of the land only, not the improvements. We haven't worked out the details if they don't exercise the option at phase 15, but essentially through year 30, Save the Family would have the option to purchase it. At year 30, Gorman would have an obligation to purchase the property at fair market value for the land only.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Councilwoman Higgins.
Yeah, I have a question. Did we look at looking at the lease rate tied to their actual performance of their property as opposed to a nominal rate?
Yes, that will be part of it. We're working out what those performance metrics are. The idea is that there will be deed restrictions on the property, both for the north side of university and the south side, that they will have to meet performance requirements as far as maintaining the property, complying with SEPTED requirements, with the TriStar multi-housing program. They do have a maintenance plan that has been submitted to Department of Housing that we're looking at that will be part of this agreement, basically stipulating how that property is managed, and that will... Those performance metrics will be a part of the agreement, and that's really the consideration for the nominal lease, that they will provide that community benefit of having affordable housing. regarding the property on the south side, the deed restrictions will be that it has to be maintained in perpetuity as a community service facility. And we're working with a couple of different folks on exactly what those performance measures are to maintain it as at that community amenity.
Ms. Richards?
Now, just to follow up, we didn't look at, like, the actual lease rate related to what their plan for, for their investment and their return on investment. We didn't tie it to that, and could we tie it to that? Because, you know, yes, they're doing all these things, but we're still nominally leasing city property to them, and they could be making, you know, whatever, large percentages of money on taxpayer on our city-owned land. So the actual, you know, you have $6,000 a year with a 3% annual. That actual sum, could it be tied to the performance of the property?
Mr. Brady? And
just the direction we got from council was to pursue this nominal fee with the idea that this development was providing a public service. So that's the direction we headed in. We didn't look at some percentage of income or not income, but profit. So this is the way, this is what we came up with the idea that it obligates the development to continue to maintain this public service by providing this housing for the term, and then at the end they have the option to purchase it at market rate. But as long as they're providing this housing for this purpose, then that was the consideration for the rate. That was the direction we thought we understood from council.
I think that was the majority direction.
Okay. Any other questions, Councilwoman Higgins?
No, thank you.
Great. Mr. Richards?
I think I just want to understand how the city is adequately protected and taxpayers in this deal, because we've had the collapse of nonprofit housing developers. I think Community Services of Arizona is struggling. We have Housing in Our Communities, which has declared bankruptcy. So we have a nonprofit and we have a housing developer, which the recession has proved to be not necessarily the most stable of structures. So, you know, going forward, what happens if Gorman goes away? What happens if, say, the family goes away as entities? What happens to this project, and who's on the hook for it?
Well, I will look for some assistance from the folks behind me, but we actually had that conversation yesterday. How is the city protected? And it's my understanding, and others will correct me if I'm wrong, that for the first 15 years, the 99.99% investors are really the major players at the table. They're the ones that have the money on the line. And what we were advised yesterday is if there's a problem, it's really the investors that have the majority of the interest in it, and they will be highly motivated to make sure that their investment is protected. So that was the answer for the first 15 years. And Brian, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think the simple answer is would be replaced by the investor. Either the nonprofit or the for-profit entity involved in the project would just simply be replaced with a stronger, you know, member, I guess you would say.
I just wanted that point to come out because it's important to understand that there is a very strong market component to these low-income housing tax credit deals. They're not just, it's just not the subsidized housing that people's used to hearing about 20 years ago. It's significantly market-driven, and it's just a nuance that I think protects a lot of folks. And I don't have any doubt that, say, the family in Gorman are going to be around for a long time. But that's important to understand that those investors, they're scrutinizing every aspect of this deal constantly because they don't want to put their tax credits in jeopardy because they don't want to have to pay those back to the IRS. For some reason, people think the IRS is cranky. I don't know why, but, you know, it's one of those things. Thank you.
Yeah, it's our understanding also that for the first 15 years at least, the Department of Housing performs audits on an annual basis, and it is compliance with the IRS regulations, which, as I understand it, are very strict as to the performance and the maintenance of the property. After year 15 to 30, maybe, Brian, you could speak to that a little bit, how that works.
Yeah, the Arizona Department of Housing actually oversees compliance and monitoring for the full 30-year period, not just the first 15 years. However, if we convert these units to for sale, we have to sell these units to income-qualified home buyers. That's a point in time where the department would stop sort of monitoring the activities on an annual basis because it would be a home ownership type situation.
And that was actually part of the application, I think, that at year 15, they would have the option to start offering those units for sale to qualified purchasers.
Council members, I would add that it's the intent of Save the Family that even during that sale period, should the Department of Housing pull out, our intent would be to continue monitoring and managing that property to sustain the quality management of it, operations.
Council members, it should be noted, though, that the home funds would require a 20-year affordability period, and the City of Mesa would also be monitoring that every year.
Okay, that was a group answer.
I have my friends here to help. Okay, just to reiterate that the basic deal points, in addition to the 30-year nominal lease, is that Gorman and Companies will be responsible for upgrading all of the utilities, water, sewer, electric, gas, sidewalks. They're not asking for any contribution from the city on that. They will pay all permit and impact fees. The reason I brought this up, the question was asked last time, and I didn't know the answer. Will be approximately $55,000 in building permit fees for phase one. Impact fees will be about $78,000. There exists about $325,000 of credits on the property already, so they'll get credit for those credits, and then the balance will be $78,000, and then approximately $8,000 in water meters. As I explained early on, Gorman will maintain the security and the basic landscaping of the Phase 2 property until they either get their tax credit financing to move forward with that Phase 2 or they lose the rights to the property. On the Community Services campus south of University, again, we will deed restrict that property to Community Services in perpetuity, and in the lease and the development agreement, we will have specifications as to what that means. There will be certain uses that will absolutely be excluded by lease or by deed in perpetuity. At year 15, in consideration of the community services that Save the Family has provided, both for that first 15 years and then also into the future, the proposal is that the land would be deeded to Save the Family at net zero. So I would be looking for some direction on that point.
Direction, comments from council? Council comfortable with that proposal? Councilwoman Higgins, you okay?
Yep, fine.
Very good.
Great, thank you very much. The Helen's Hope Chest is proposed to be a similar type of deal. If United Way takes the option on the 8,000 square feet for north of University as part of Phase 2, if they get their Phase 2 funding, that the same thing, if they operate that for 15 years and provide that significant community service, and it's deed restricted to continue to provide community service in perpetuity, the land would be deeded to Mesa United Way for a community service net zero of the land. Good with
Council,
that?
Council, are you comfortable with that direction as well? Hearing nothing, I think we're giving you direction.
Thank you, sir. Again, the deed restrictions on the north of University, and I think Councilmember Richens, this goes to your point a little bit, that we will be putting deed restrictions on the use of the property so it is maintained as affordable housing. At year 30, when it can be converted to fair market value, whoever the developer is at that time would have to come to the city and ask for those deed restrictions to be removed. So the city would maintain an ability to make sure what happens to the property.
Mr. Richens?
Okay, just to be clear, we're ground leasing the property to them, and if, say, in 30 years they or 15 years they convert it to a for sale product, we have an option in there to sell the fee simple title of the property to the...
And the deal is that it would be at, the sale would be at fair market value of the land.
Can there be a structure about a sale project? If we're going to do a for sale product there, say that scenario plays out in 15 years, do we have to sell that property? Couldn't we retain the ownership of that property and sell the units to help with the affordability? That way they don't have to absorb land costs in there. Put it in a land trust or some kind of structure.
Yeah, Councilman Richens, as long as the land structure accommodates a home buyer's ability to secure mortgage financing to purchase the unit, there's lots of possibilities. I think if it's a short-term lease, a home buyer is going to have a hard time getting a mortgage on that property.
Are there structures in the market that, that allow for that? Like I hear people doing land trusts for affordable housing where the, a city or somebody would retain ownership of the property, then the structure on top of that would sell.
That would certainly be a possibility. The community land trust model would work perfectly in that scenario because that's a long-term lease arrangement.
Excuse me. Thank you. Council, if I could just ask some direction, excuse me, Donna Bronski from the city attorney's office. The deal is not currently structured that way. The deal is structured so that at the end of the ground lease, whether that's 15 years or some other year between 15 and 30, currently it's set up so that Gorman will guarantee to purchase it at fair market value so that they can then convert it to a for-profit, either a for-profit or a market-related product, and the intent would be that when they pay the fair market value, the city would release the deed restriction. If you want to go in a different direction, we're going to need some clear direction.
Can we make that decision in 15 years? I mean, why do we have to make that decision now?
It's just actually how we've negotiated the deal to date. So if you want us to look at that, they're going to have to run numbers. And
I don't know.
So the difference is that if they're going to turn this from a nonprofit, incentivized low-income housing to a more market rate, we felt like then there's a difference for us too. You know, if we were just selling this for a market rate development, you know, how would we behave? Would we be contributing it as a putting the land in for free or at a normal rate like we're doing? So all we're saying is if they decide they want to go in a different direction, we need to be in a position that we can negotiate the value of the land. Now, the council 15 years from now may decide they really like the idea of market rate housing and come up with some whatever they believe that that time is the appropriate transaction for the land sale. We just wanted to reserve a position to have that discussion 15 years from now.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on because we can't bind the hands of the council in 15 years, but we also want to preserve all the options.
And that's what that we've done. I think that's what we've done with the deed restrictions.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
One of the issues that came up with regard to the investors, and Brian will help me out here, the request to subordinate our land interest to the investors, but with deed restrictions on the use of the land, that basically puts us in second position relative to any default. So I would ask for direction on that also.
Well, it's just that's our recommendation. So that's the way they're going to be able to get it. They're only going to be able to get finance if we subordinate.
So council comfortable with staff recommendation on that? Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you. And again, if Save the Family does not exercise the option to purchase the property between year 15 and 30, the current proposal is that Gorman would be obligated to purchase it at year 30, again, at fair market value for the land only. We talked a little bit about performance criteria. I don't have those in detail for you right now. We're working them out. But basically, we would be monitoring the construction milestones, and they have to submit a schedule to Department of Housing. They have to have the phase one project up and certificate of occupancy by mid-November 2013. So they have a pretty aggressive construction schedule, and we will be monitoring that just through our normal building inspections process. We basically are proposing a 60-day cure period if they fall too far behind. They have to be out of the ground November 1st. So we, assuming that all the building plans go through the process, the permits would be issued the end of October, and then the city would have to certify to the state that they are, in fact, under construction no later than November 1st.
Mr. Richards.
What qualifies as under construction, demolition of some of the existing units? I mean, is that...
Yes, it does.
Okay. All right.
I would imagine that they will probably get started on that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we can't start anything until the environmental review is completed because of the home funds. And obviously we need permits and we have to close our partnership. Otherwise we're, you know, moving forward at risk. But beyond that, we can pull a demo permit, grading and drainage permit, and really get started on the site work.
I could give him a demo permit tomorrow.
Yeah.
OK. Okay. We would also be requiring that they maintain SEPTED standards for the buildings and that they participate in the police department's TriStar multi-housing program. They do, under the Department of Housing requirements, have to have a reserve fund. We will be proposing an annual meeting to review those, to review their performa, to review what they're actually putting into that reserve fund, again, so the units are maintained over time and that they have the money to repair air conditioning units and keep those units up to a level of quality that we would expect and the way they're constructed initially. And again, there's a proposal that we would, the city, for the first 15 years and potentially on to year 30, would have an annual meeting and a report. So to protect the city's interest, we could ensure and have documentation that the property was being adequately maintained. And we would also request copies of the ADOH audits.
Ms. Richens.
Your investors require a pretty robust reserve fund, do they not?
Yes, they do, Councilman Richens. We have to place $250 per unit per year into a capital replacement reserve from day one. And that reserve builds over time. Sometimes you capitalize that up front, or at least a portion of it. In the state of Arizona's case, they require that we capitalize the first full year of replacement reserves, and then you pay into it on a monthly basis from monthly rents at a rate of $250 per unit per year. And then over that 15-year life cycle, that's sort of the sweet spot for where you need to be in year 5 and 10 when AC units and things like that start going out on you.
I wish all apartment or multifamily housing folks did that.
Just to remind you real quickly, this is a bad graphic, but basically the colored portion here shows what's in phase one. Again, in the south of University, this is not an accurate representation, but there will be the 15,000 square foot Save the Family building down here someplace south of University as part of phase one. Initial renderings here, the residential units north of University, these are the ones facing University. This is a very preliminary sketch on the Save the Family building that we'll have to go through design review. John, I think it's going middle of August to design review.
Actually, it should be on there July
11th. Oh, okay. Great. That's basically the proposed deal points. Looks like we've gotten some direction. Specifically, are there any other general comments?
Yeah, comments, Mr. Finter?
With regard to utilities, did anybody do an estimate of what kind of a return on utilities that will be paid to the city, water, gas, electric, anything like that done yet?
We haven't really done that yet. We can certainly get with Energy and Water Resources and get an estimate of what the revenue would be for those utilities.
I just thought it was a positive point with all the other good things going on to see that. Councilmember Richens has pointed out when you have inactive land, it doesn't generate anything, but this is going to be a return since we control all the utilities to the citizens of Mesa.
I would think Frank and Catherine can get me that.
Mm-hmm. And Councilman Finter, I'd like to also add that currently this property is off the tax rolls, but because of the LLC structure, it's technically owned by a for-profit entity. So it's going to be taxed as a market rate transaction, even though it's income restricted. So you're actually putting this property long term from day one back on the tax rolls as well.
Excellent.
And Councilman, I would also add that we're very much looking forward to reducing the number of police and fire calls to the area. Last year there were 780 calls. So we believe by developing this property and securing a solid presence in that neighborhood will help decrease those costs to the city.
Nice. All positive points. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the presentation. I think this is an important step in the evolution of this property. Going back a number of years ago when prior council closed the project and we lost affordable housing, I think you put together a plan to help restore the affordable housing as well as to create a great opportunity for Save the Family. So it's a complicated arrangement and we hope it all works well for this first phase and look forward to continued discussions. Any further comments from the council? Councilwoman Higgins, anything?
No, I'm fine.
All right, thank you very much.
We will be back at the July 9th council meeting with the lease and the development agreement for your consideration with the detail.
Yeah, and just a note to all parties, that's your last day to get it done. If it's not done, it doesn't happen.
Actually, the last day is more like the second.
Well, July 9th, well, we got to take action on July 9th is my point.
Right.
So there's a lot of lead time before that. So get busy.
Yes, sir.
Everyone will be busy. All right.
Thank you.
Next item on our agenda is to hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. I think I'll start. Councilwoman Higgins and I attended an event for the Shrine Adult Daycare on Saturday night, and we helped recognize the retiring CEO Peter Sissons for all the work that he's done in the community. It was a great celebration of a nonprofit that's done a wonderful work for our community for many, many years. Any other reports on these? Mr. Richens.
Yeah, we had a District 1 family swim night at Keno Pool. Had a little over 500 people show up, give out lots of hot dogs, and had a great event. Had a great visit and a great training session by the lifeguards and the paramedics when my son went off the little bouncy thing strangely into the water and hurt his neck. So it was a training drill, right? but everybody had a really great time. It was a really great celebration of our fantastic aquatics program. And I want to thank Mark Foote and all those involved with him in our aquatics program. They always do a great job. And also had some volunteers from District 1, a lot of folks from the Montague family that helped cook hot dogs for us.
Any other reports? Mr. Fincher. Yeah.
We had an informal gathering yesterday afternoon in the general area of Pueblo and Lindsay, and that was the Mesa Police Department chasing three burglary suspects that were caught in a home and then an ensuing pursuit. And I got to tell you, I heard more the gathering of all the neighbors and out there. It looked like the 3rd Cavalry had come into the neighborhood, air support, SWAT team, dogs. We had people holed up in kind of barricaded in situations. And how impressed we were with the Mesa Police Department to know that kind of response with bad guys roaming the neighborhood and jumping into backyards and running through houses. So just hats off to the Mesa Police Department. And I can tell you the neighborhood that I live in is so thoroughly impressed with the service they get here. So thank you.
Anything else from council? Next is scheduling of meetings and general information. I think there's a big party tonight.
Yeah, thank you. There is. We invite everybody out for Celebrating Mesa at Pioneer Park. So it's a free event, music, games, and lots of water in cool zones. So want to invite everybody out. It'll be a great event. Kind of as a follow-up from last year's anniversary celebration for the Parks Department. This is we've moved City Hall in the Mall to City Hall in the Park. So our departments will be there along with many others. So we invite everybody to come out tonight from 6 to 9. Our next council meeting and study session will be June 25th. We need to know who will be here. We need to make sure we have enough votes for approving the budget that night. So if you're not going to be here, let us know so we can make sure we can track you down by phone or something. And then next Tuesday, June 26th at 9 a.m., will be the Fiesta Police Substation groundbreaking. So we invite everybody out to that at 1010 West Grove. Thank you.
Great. We have one request to speak under items from citizens present, and we have Mr. Thomas Olick. So if you please come up and identify yourself for the record, and you'll have 3 minutes.
I'm Thomas Olick from 7554 East Clovis Circle. I wanted to speak to council about the light rail direction that it's going. It's apparent the plans were to show it was going to go south on Mesa Drive. What I'm here for is for the citizens and the businesses of East Mesa. I feel they're kind of losing of that capability of people to reach out to the businesses that are on Main Street. And so the direction it's going, we're also missing some of the seniors in East Mesa, some of the low-cost housing for those types of people that need good and clean transportation to their places in Phoenix. And I'm hoping that the council speaks to Metro about the direction that it's going. I have already. They also agreed with me of the direction of the light rail design seems to be not for the general population. And it's also concerns of tourism further out in East Mesa. And so I feel they're running short. And the study that was made was from the Maricopa Association of Government. I feel that's an old study that was taken, and I don't think it's very correct of their information that they've collected. I've also spoke to ADOT and the Federal Highway Administration about this concern. And so I was hoping for the support from the council in Mesa to hopefully improve this. Whether I'm here on time or not, I might be too late to change this. That's why I'm looking for the support of the city of Mesa to maybe accomplish the good things for the businesses on Main Street that I've been there for a very long time. They're having hard times also, and also all the citizens that are in East Mesa have spent a lot of taxes in past years for this types of things that need the money for that design. So that's basically why I'm here, is for your support.
Thank you very much for your comments. I know that there will be ongoing discussion between the City of Mesa and Valley Metro and Maricopa Association of Governments on extension of light rail beyond the Mesa Drive section. So we appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And any other items? Otherwise, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn. So we moved and seconded. All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you very much.